Yeah, yo. Yeah, yo. Moolala. Yeah, yo. Bitch better have my money.
Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me Cece, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hello. Good morning.
So we want to begin with the nonsense that is George Lopez. George Lopez, who is a washed-up comedian who sometimes does funny things on something like The Real Husbands of Hollywood, was giving a show and delivered one of his standard jokes that he's been delivering for a long time. And it goes something like, there's still two rules in the fucking Latino family. Don't marry somebody black and don't park in front of our house. And while some of the audience laughed, apparently a black woman who was fairly far front stood up, flipped him off, and instead of taking it in stride or making another joke out of it, he decided to cuss her out, told her to sit her fucking ass down. She paid to see a show. She needs to sit her ass down. If she can't take a joke, she's in the wrong motherfucking place. And after cussing her out, he then says she needs to make a decision if she's going to sit down and enjoy the show or if she's going to leave. And then for whatever reason, he continues to escalate it himself on his own and decides that he's going to make the decision for her and has her escorted out of the facility.
She was actually sitting down at this point.
And what is odd is, like, the crowd continues to cheer. Obviously, it's the video's dark, so it's impossible to know what everyone was doing at the time and how people were reacting, but mostly you hear cheers. And on the website where this was mentioned, there were some comments, and one of them was by a black woman. I never read the comments because I want to live a long life, but I did happen to run past one comment where a black woman said, I'm a black woman. She needs to get over herself. This is comedy.
Oh, that's been said many times before. As a matter of fact, on The Talk with Aisha Taylor and Sherry Underwood, both who have been, I guess, consider themselves friends of George Lopez and stand for him, they both said some variation of that, you know, oh, he's such a great guy. He's really supported us in our careers, as if that has anything to do with his abysmal behavior in this instance. So, of course, in their eyes, he could do no wrong. The issue here wasn't so much that he called out a heckler. That happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The issue here was that for 1 minute, and if you ever have seen a stand-up show, you know 1 minute is a lifetime. For one full plus minute,
mm-hmm.
he just goes in on her, and it's not funny and it's not creative. It's just straight up, you know, a barrage of insults
mm-hmm.
for a middle finger. Are you serious? Like, what did you expect to happen when you made a racist joke?
And what did you expect to happen when you became a comedian? Like, there's so much worse that happens to comedians.
Not only that, but he talks about, you know, when you're making jokes about race and we're making jokes about touchy subjects, abortion, rape, you name it, right? Mm-hmm. When you're making those jokes and you're reflecting something messed up about society. So Latinos have a lot of anti-blackness. Okay, we get it. Ha ha, it's funny. But he's made that joke before. He never chimes in, right? Like, so he never, ever, ever chimes in to say, yeah, but that's wrong or that's really whack because Latinos X, Y, Z and the other thing, right? Like he never gives any kind of context that balances it out. So he really is talking about his own feelings. And I think that he never, ever thought he would get called on that because there is a tremendous amount of anti-blackness in Latino communities. And you know, the idea in George Lopez's head is that it's just funny, haha, let's laugh at it. But how dare you get mad? The lady that was silenced is actually Latina herself. She's Black and Mexican. And she doesn't regret that she stood up and did that. And she said if she went to another George Lopez show, she would do the same thing.
Well, hopefully she's not going to another Lopez show. I think that should be done. Not. But what is the lesson? I'm just having a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that people are missing the point. Calling her a jerk because she stood up and I okay, fine. I don't really see it as a big deal. She stood up, she flipped him off, whatever. Okay, call her a jerk maybe because she stood up and somebody was sitting behind her and it blocked their view. That's fine. But why is everyone like happy to attack her and defend his actions rather than say he went too far? Why is that so hard?
How often do people say that you've gone too far with a Black woman? Do they say that with Anita Hill? I'm just saying, this is an American tradition. Mm. Black women are generally the people you can never go too far with. And George Lopez has tapped on that. If it was a white woman that stood up and he was making a rape joke, we would have 48 think pieces on how fucked up George Lopez is at this moment. Right now, we could be reading them off, all podcasts. You feel me? Mm. We'd be reading them off. Mm. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? But Black women are the population that you could never, ever go too far with. And it's just sad that, you know, we even don't have each other's back in this moment.
Mm.
Are you telling me that that is an appropriate comedic response? What if, okay, you don't know George Lopez from a hole in the wall.
Right.
You know, let's say he wasn't, you know, this guy with this long career or whatever. He's a rookie comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And a rookie comedian, instead of making a funny retort or adding context to the joke, or I mean, like a good comedian would have had this chick laughing.
Right. Right.
Okay. But not George Lopez, because there's something about the vitriol and the absolute disgust and contempt that he showed for this audience member,
mm-hmm.
that he took two middle fingers so personally, that is just reserved for Black women.
Mm.
And there's something about George Lopez that I think that we should talk about, because I don't think it's unrelated, because, you know, I love my little gossip. And I'm gonna bring up some tea right now. George Lopez was married for 17 years to a Latino woman. Mm-hmm. She wasn't Black.
Because he don't marry Black. Right. He don't marry Black folks.
Mm-hmm. Right. So he was married. Everybody thought they had like one of the most stable marriages in Hollywood, kind of thing.
Right.
And he had a health crisis. He needed a kidney. She was a match. She gave him her kidney. He credits it with saving his life. He had to turn his whole health around. He became, you know, he's now a healthy fitness junk, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then he filed for a divorce. This is the kind of character we're dealing with right now. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there's something about that Bible saying that says, how you treat the least of these is mm-hmm. how you treat me.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always look at someone like, how are they treating women in general? How are they treating their wives? How are they treating women in their life?
Mm-hmm.
And then here, and he's making an anti-Black joke. He's an anti-Black dude, you know? And I really wish that people like Aisha Taylor and Sherry Underwood would understand that racist people can be your friends.
Right.
Misogynist people can be your friend.
Right.
There are rapists that could be really close to you that will never rape you.
Right.
Do you understand what I mean? People are selective in who they're doing this to.
Mm-hmm.
Would he have done this if it was Oprah standing up with the double fingers? No.
No.
Would he have done that? Do you understand what I mean? People are selective. They know who they can get away with. Right. And he probably, there was a little bit of symbiotic nature in him feeding off that energy.
Well, of course, because of the response of the crowd. He got that back up. Because he actually did pause. It mm-hmm. seemed like he was ready to move on.
Mm-hmm.
But the crowd.
But then he gets egged on.
Right. But the crowd enjoyed what he said. So he kept it going.
Mm-hmm.
And they got louder as he got louder. So.
Sure. And I think that we have to also understand kind of like the crowd dynamic is that if you're going through a comedy show and you've been laughing for the last 10 minutes.
Right.
It's almost a given that the next thing that is said, even if it's absolutely outrageous and not funny, you're going to laugh at, because you got leftover laughter. You know, when you tell a good joke, I'm laughing for 30 minutes. So it's not, you know, you like the car.
It's not unusual.
It's not unusual. So I'm not going to, but, you know, he's feeding off of that and he's not commanding. But I think that that's when all your inner stuff comes out.
Yes. Oh, that's what it did.
That's what people are talking about.
That is.
George's inner stuff is not cute.
No.
And he's supposed to be Mr. Wholesome Latino comedian, isn't he?
I don't know about Wholesome.
He not Wholesome?
I don't know that he was ever Wholesome.
I thought he was a Latino Bill Cosby girl. I don't
know. No. Not George. Mm-mm. He doesn't fit that bill. In other hypocritical news, we have a blonde-headed Black man who... Ooh. I don't know what he's doing right now, but he is still active on Twitter. and has deleted any implication of his ties, affinity for, acknowledgement of President Cheeto. And I wonder what happened. I have to assume it has to do with the fact that he's married to a woman who clearly comes from an immigrant family. Her father, Mr. Big Time Kardashian, was a third generation Armenian American. Her mom has like all the things, Irish, Greek, whatever, whatever. Do you think that's what happened? Do you think that was the final wake-up call?
I don't know. I think it's a really sad thing. We're talking about Kanye and Kim.
Everybody knows who we're talking about.
A little bit.
Everybody knows.
I was confused for a second. I was like, you mean Frank Ocean? What he doing?
No. Frank was never repping for Cheeto.
I understand. I was thinking,
Blonde haired, yes.
Okay, so here's the deal with these two. It's a sad, sad day, Kanye, when your Black appropriating white wife is woker than you. Like, it's so sad. Like, when you less woke than a Kardashian, like, that's real sadness.
Yikes.
So, yeah, but I kind of think it was all game. And I also think that there was a lot of fallout with some health challenges, some mental health challenges that he was having. I mean, we have to also put in perspective that this is someone who checked himself in to a mental health program.
He didn't check himself in. He was checked.
Okay.
He was sent there.
Okay.
He did not check himself in. He was sent there after a 911 call.
Oh, wow. Right. Okay. So
shortly after being released from the UCLA Medical Center for the health crisis, yes. Mental health crisis. Then he met with him. Yes.
Right. So he comes out of there and he goes to the hotel and he has some pitches and he looks dazed and confused. I love the thing in the back of this Black dude looking real stern. And it's like this dude came back from the future to stop Kanye and he missed it.
He missed the opportunity. It was too late. The window closed.
Yeah. Too late. It did look like some T2 stuff. So, yeah, I mean, like, I think that anybody that is making some decisions about who they... He doesn't say anything, mind you, in the photo op. In his concert, he did say some nonsense. But as I said, right after that concert, then he gets checked in. He comes out, he does the photo op. And at the photo op, he's like, I'm here to take a picture. And I think that a lot of that was just really exploiting someone in a vulnerable position. I'm going to just believe that because I just cannot wrap my head around that being, I mean, he's just not a very political person, and him and Chrisette Michelle are in the same box of no political genius type stuff. Right. So he did the photo op. I think he got paid. I think it was just like any modeling gig, any kind of appearance fee, you know, come here, stand here, smile for the camera, get your money. But I don't know if it was a relationship that went beyond any of that. What do you think?
I don't know, because it's hard to know with Ye these days. You know, I used to defend him heavily. I don't really know where his head is at these days, but he wasn't only taking pictures. You know, he was making statements about the things that they were going to be talking about, multiculturalism. He's from Chicago. He said he was doing it for his city. I don't know. I feel like, plus all of the things that he had on Twitter and just even, and of course, yes, and there is a context with this rant at the concert happening right before he gets checked into the medical center. But for him to go on a rant and talk about if he would have voted, he would have voted for Trump. It did feel a bit like Azalea talking, who obviously also has mental health issues, talking about basically after the fact, after they felt safe enough because the person had won, talking about how they were for that person. I mean, you know.
But he done deleted all of that, right?
He deleted all of that.
He also had some people that were close to him in his life. It seemed that they were close to him. Take him aside and be like, nah. Mos Def.
Yeah.
T.I.
Oh, yeah. T.I. went in.
I mean, big name.
Yeah.
Right? Big names that did open letters to him, that went and I'm sure talked to him personally. I'm sure Beyonce, you know, maybe if she still talked to him, I don't know. But yeah, definitely he had to read the writing on the wall. Like, there's some things that you can't do in this group.
Right.
And that's one of them.
That's one of them. On the other hand, Michael Ealy, who used to be considered one of the finest brothers in Hollywood, he who keeps his personal life very personal and private, posted a picture of his wife, who's an Afghan American. Her name is Katira Rafiqzadeh. I don't know if they met on, I don't know. But anyway, she stars in Think Like a Man, which I have never watched and never will. But he posted a picture of them together after the 7-country travel ban that targeted Muslim countries. So this travel ban seems to have been something to ignite more viciously people's activism because it hits so close to home for so many people. I mean, America is built on immigration, right? So there are positive things that are coming from it. Kanye's getting his mind back. Maybe a little bit. Getting his priorities back. Getting his direction, his vision, something. I don't know. Azalea, it didn't work on Azalea. Azalea tried to come for Riri, and Riri was like, hold up. I'm not the one.
That flame war. You're posting each other's phone numbers. That was very real. I'm not real. No, you gotta change your number. Like, look, Riri is about to cut off anyone who ever gives Azalea her phone number ever again, ever. Look, like, why does Azalea even have phone numbers?
I don't know, because I would give her like a landline that lives in a flat that I'm never in or something. That's what I would give her. But
why does she have phone numbers?
Speaking of etiquette, did you happen to see Nikki's rant on Twitter about how to text her properly? A lot of people were like, why is she being the text Nazi? And I was kind of like, I'm feeling everything she posted, though.
Okay, so enlighten me.
Nikki was like, if you have a paragraph to write me, get that shit out in a paragraph instead of writing me line for line. I was like, yes, do not hit enter until you got them 5 sentences out. Boom, I'm on it. And she was like, if you trying to write me okay and you write a double K, I will block you. 1K suffices.
I'm just saying, touchy, touchy for you.
Yes. She was like, and if you do this, I will block you. And if you do that, I will block you. But I was feeling like every statement. I was like, yes, somebody finally know the rules that I like. Nikki also
I'm just glad she's a single. She's free agent now.
Yes, thank you, Jesus. But Nikki also became vocal about the fact that she's an immigrant, right? So this ban has really done
Caribbean women are running things right now.
Absolutely. In our second segment, I wanted to talk a bit about the power of banking Black and Black business. So One United Bank, which is apparently the largest Black-owned bank in the United States, has decided to partner with Black Lives Matter to do a larger campaign around banking Black and raising more funds for the Black Lives Matter movement. Apparently, Black Lives Matter, when they were founded 3 years ago with the three beautiful women we talk about often enough, that was the bank they went to. They've been banking with that bank from the beginning. And now they've also started a campaign with a debit card image. And on that debit card, you see a child who they've named Amir, a Black boy, and a young Black boy. And in the background of that, you also see the images of Tommy Smith and John Carlos, who became really famous. They were already famous, but became really famous for their Black Power salute in the 1968 Olympics when they were standing on the awards podium. So many things that we could talk about with this. But one, I want to talk about the fact that the timing is great. It's Black History Month, and they've decided to do this. But also, I think what Black people forget quite often, especially when, because of the way that Black history is taught, the boycotts were more than just simple protests. So they've been, as Chrisette said, you know, boycott, that doesn't mean anything today. That's not true. Black people in America have a spending power of $1.2 trillion. So boycotts can actually have an impact. And with this campaign, people will also be given the opportunity to donate to Black Lives Matter, either regularly or a one-off donation, monthly, annually, whatever. And I expect that they will, because they're making it quite easy for customers to do it, they will recognize an increase in donations. What do you think about the idea of, or the importance of, banking Black and supporting Black-owned businesses in this way?
I think it's really, really powerful. I mean, we're seeing it right now with the pipeline protests. The city of Seattle just voted unanimously divest from Wells Fargo.
So I'll explain a little bit about that. Wells Fargo is one of 17 banks that is involved in the financing of the pipeline, and it claims that it's obligated to carry out its credit agreement. The bank is providing $120 million of the $2.5 billion necessary for the project. Seattle City Council decided that they were going to break ties. They were going to end their relationship with Wells Fargo at the end of 2000, or I don't know if it's the end or the beginning of 2018, when the contract finishes. Wells Fargo manages about $3 billion of Seattle's operating accounts, which is everything from payroll to business taxes and city fines. They did this because of Seattle chose to do this because of the involvement with Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo already took a hit last year. The scandal was revealed that their employees were creating fraudulent accounts in order to meet their sales goals. After that happened, California and Illinois announced that they would suspend some business relationships with the bank. And Seattle city officials ended negotiations with Wells Fargo then already over a $100 million bond deal for the city's electric utility. So Wells Fargo continues to take hits. Many people are urging Seattle to now look for a nonprofit bank or credit union to replace Wells Fargo when they move on. So just so people have the
background. And they came up with some criteria to find a new bank. I hope they do go in that direction of a socially progressive bank. I think coming back to what you started with Chrisette Michelle's thing, that boycotts don't work. I also agree that she's wrong as a whole, that boycotts do work and flexing your financial muscles sometimes has even a greater effect than your vote, right? However, I think what a lot of people are getting at is that it's not as straightforward as it was 40, 50 years ago, in the sense of it's hard to trace a lot of our purchases back to certain companies, right? I looked at the Grab Your Wallet campaign, which is a campaign that is trying to boycott businesses that are affiliated with Trump. And there's a spreadsheet, and it's a long spreadsheet. And there's some surprises on there, at least for me, there were some surprises on. And it's a lot to keep in my head when, let's say, I'm Joe Blow going to the Walmart. I mean, I don't come into contact with some of those brands just because I live in Vienna. But if I were living in Arkansas and I didn't have the options that I had, right, and Walmart was it, I think that it would become a little bit more difficult because people, CEOs and owners are very flexible. I'm going to give you an example of what I'm talking about. As you know, there was a Delete Uber campaign because the CEO of Uber was on the Business Advisory Council of Trump.
That's not what started the Delete Uber campaign, though. The Delete Uber campaign was started because they stopped surge pricing after the yellow cabs of New York said for 1 hour that they would not service the airport after everything was going on with the protests. They did that in solidarity with the protesters. And shortly after that, Uber said, okay, then we won't do surge pricing. And that was seen as, whether you believe him or not, they said that it was misinterpreted. They didn't do that to hurt the protesters. They did that to help them. That's neither here or there. That's what they said. But it was too late. The Delete Uber campaign had already been launched. And then on top of it, people were like, also, he's on this committee. But a lot of people are on that committee.
He's also a butthead.
But he's left, but he's left the committee now. I think he was the right target.
It was, right. After the 200,000 people deleted during that time and cited the reasons of the trying to break the JFK strike as their reason.
Right.
Okay, 200,000 people deleted. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people then downloaded Lyft.
Right. And Lyft is one of the biggest competitors in the U.S. Unfortunately, Lyft isn't everywhere, but Lyft is in the U.S. and it's Uber's major competitor in the U.S. And Lyft has already been vocal about their donations and support for anti-Trump measures.
Exactly. But some of the owners of Uber own Lyft as well. Not all of it.
No. But yeah, they have stakes in it.
But a chunk of it.
Right. Which is not uncommon.
Right. And I think that's, and I'm giving Chrisette Michelle way too much credit here. I'm sure.
Yeah, she wasn't that deep. Mm-mm.
She wasn't that deep?
No.
But when I hear that, that's what I get at, is that when you start tracing these companies, you got one company that looks like good cop, you got another company that looks like bad cop. But, you know, are they really, is the money really going to different people at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. And that's what gets a bit scary. Now, with banks, it's a little bit more straightforward, right? If you got a credit union, it's a lot more straightforward.
Yes.
But I think a lot of people get exhausted because it's not a time where we just go to this general store or that general store, right? It's a time where we're buying easily. If we come out of a clothing spree or a back to school shopping or whatever, we have just bought like 30, 50 brands, right? We don't know much about a lot of those brands. And then there's all of these like financial things that we don't know, you know, so Bank of America, but then do we know that Bank of America also owns these smaller banks that we may not associate with Bank of America? Do you understand what I mean? So that's a full-time job sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad for campaigns like Grab Your Wallet that simplify it and say, here's this list. And I'm really glad for campaigns like this with Black Lives Matter and the bank, the Black Bank, that say, okay, here's what you can do right now. Mm-hmm. About a few months ago, there was a list that was circulating of Black banks that you could divest from major banks and put your money in these Black-owned banks. I think it was about 10 Black banks. And there was a major bank, a credit union in Atlanta, that was seeing a lot of people come through. So that was wonderful. So I think that, yeah, go ahead and do that. I also understand that there might be some exhaustion. So this is a win-win. This is something you could definitely do.
It's something you could definitely do. But also what people often talk about, it'll come up. I think it comes up even in films like Barbershop and whatnot. There's a large criticism of the fact that Black people don't buy Black, right? So there was that whole research campaign of the woman who bought Black for an entire year. And she brings up the things that we've all heard, you know, Black people love to buy Hennessy and Kovasi and all those things. And those are not owned by Black people. We all know that. But I feel like people also don't know their history, because there was a Black Wall Street and there were entire cities that were owned by Black people and that were for Black people well before, you know, during Reconstruction already. And those cities were burned to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Or destroyed through infrastructure changes. I mean, like the city that I had a business in and lived in, Durham, what happened was there was a Black Wall Street and it was a Black concentrated community. And one of the things that they did was they took a lot of those properties through eminent domain and put a highway called 147 right through the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it really broke up and destroyed that community to a large extent.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah. It's worth mentioning here before we end this segment that One United Bank did not at all see itself in the subprime crisis, because they have hard criteria. They did not participate in that. They very proudly state that on their website. They are currently only in three cities, Los Angeles, Boston, and Miami, but they have funded really great project in different. So, for example, in the past 2 years, just they financed over $100 million in loans for low to moderate income communities such as South Central, Compton, Liberty City, and Roxbury. Liberty City! So if you're interested, definitely check them out. It's a campaign that is definitely, most definitely worth supporting. And in our last segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? So I have already seen Moonlight.
Yes.
And I complained to you just recently that I found out that Barry was up in Berlin giving Q&As and whatnot and hadn't come to London. Well, he's coming to London on Monday. Guess who got like the front row seat?
You know, I don't even know you. And
I got the front row seat.
It's over.
I'm going to be there with the pen and paper to the glasses.
Listen.
I'm going to raise my hand real. Like the school.
I'm not talking to you anymore.
Yes,
I gotta go.
Repping for Dade County for the 305. Hi, Liberty City. Miami Gardens here. I'd like to ask a few questions. Maybe we can exchange details afterwards. That's going to be me on Monday. Yes, bet.
Why am I blanking on news? There's news about Moonlight, and I want to say a series type thing, something.
Oh,
he's just parlayed Moonlight into something else. But I do know Awesome Lovey just joined Shondaland.
Yes.
And that's exciting.
Shonda's going to make a series out of that, out of the book.
I'm judging you.
Making a series out of it. No one better to do that, because Shonda be judging everybody. just look at them shows, man. Yes. Also, very excited about the fact that Hidden Figures, as of yesterday, surpassed La La Land to be the highest grossing film in the category of nominations at the Oscars for Best Film. So for so what all you're of saying those people is... who say that mm-hmm. Black women, especially if you will, well, not that they were no names, right? But Janelle Monáe is pretty new to the acting game. You can't have a high grossing film without some white man on the front. Well, Ryan Gosling didn't do it for La La Land. These three women have done it. How about that?
And it's a moral victory, right? Because La La Land is about a white man saving jazz and treating his girlfriend like crap. But still somehow being a heartthrob. You know, he's like the worst date ever. Talk about, you don't really understand. Let me explain to you what you are seeing right now.
It hurts.
Is no amount of cute that could make that a good date. But okay.
Look, I am so an Oscars aficionado, and I don't plan on watching that film. I don't even plan on watching it ahead of the Oscars. I can't do it. I can't be bothered.
I'm going to admit that in Australia, I came out of one film and like poked my head in La La Land for a good 5 minutes. And I was like, this is torture. I felt like someone was stabbing my eyeballs. Like, I was like, what is happening? He's just like brooding all over the place and like banging on a piano. I'm like, calm down. And I love jazz.
You said calm down.
This was sad.
Yes. I'm also excited about the fact that Atlanta fans are great. I grew up a Miami Dolphins fan, so I know what loss is. I do. But that was a hard loss on Sunday. But Atlanta fans are keeping it real. And the greatest meme of all time, T.I. posted it, but I did see it before T.I. posted it. I'm sure they were all in their feelings because, like, Titty Boy, T.I., Ludacris, NeNe Leakes, all of them were, like, celebrating, counting chickens before they hatched. However, that meme of the that's going around that's so popular right now, the Black man, like, touching his forehead, like, ha-ha. The meme for the Atlanta Falcons is, don't win the Super Bowl so you don't have to go to the White House.
Yeah, excited about the Patriots holding it down.
Exactly. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Some of them have already said
it. Two Black players have said it. And it is basically a challenge to the rest of the Black players to see if they're going to go or not. But it was kind of a game anti versus pro, because it is well known that the coach, as well as the owner of the Patriots, as well as that washed up quarterback, are all pro Cheeto. So there you go. It was hard to see them win.
Can we have a circle with Beast Mode and Richard Sherman? just be like, come to Jesus. Don't do it. You know, I think that a lot of people, especially the rookies on that team, are probably thinking, this might cost me endorsements. This might cost me money if I decide to
sell. I think they'd be wrong. Because the NFL doesn't allow you to be political, first of all. You're not allowed to do politics at the NFL in any form. So I think
that's why the dude that is definitely sitting out saying, I can't talk about it right now, but I'm not going. I don't feel welcome. Right. And that's it.
That's it. So yeah. What are you excited about?
Oh, I think I chimed in there. I'm excited about some people foregoing their Oscar parties and donating that money to the ACLU. Good.
Oh, amazing. That's wonderful. I didn't even hear about that.
You heard about that?
Mm-mm. Who's this?
Oh, you don't
know black actors?
You know, I don't do names. I'm like, you know the white girl.
Oh, okay.
$250,000 to the ACLU instead of having an Oscar party. So that's big money that they'd be spending on Oscar parties. So I'm thinking, yes, donate that money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good. Well, I'm excited. I'm out. I'm excited about Chrissy Teigen. I'm always excited about her and happy when I see her. Chrissy Teigen talking about she's been trolling Donald for 5 years. I'm excited about that.
Excited about Melissa's performance of Sean Spicer on the SNL.
Ooh,
that was
a high point in comedy. It's like if George Lopez is our low point in comedy,
Melissa
and
definitely.
McCarthy is the high point of comedy. And you saw that Rosie O'Donnell said that she would play Bannon.
Now, I have to admit, Bannon as the Grim Reaper is pretty dope. I do like that form of him right now. But if Rosie were to play Bannon, yes, let it happen. Let only women play these members of cabinet. That would be dope. All of them be women. But Melissa nailed that. She nailed that. Like SNL, I think they have a surge in viewership right now because they're just bringing it. And like Alec Baldwin is not slowing down. Like every week he got that cold open playing
Cheeto. He's so good. He's so good. I think that this is just inspiring people.
But that cold open on Saturday when they called Bobby from Zimbabwe, woo, that was realness. So if you have not watched, for all of the listeners, if you missed the cold open from Saturday's SNL, where Trump is calling different leaders of the world, Mexico's president, Germany's chancellor, and so forth, watch it. Because there is a surprise for you at the end when he calls Zimbabwe. And it gives you life. It definitely gave me life.
I love that.
Love it.
Mugabe would say some stuff like that, wouldn't he?
Oh, Mugabe, what do you think this is? You're new to the game.
Oh, you know, there's some things that only an African dictator can say. I mean, like, not to glorify the African dictator, but there's some things they're good for, and that's one of them.
That's one of them right there. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you'd like to support us, you can go to patreon.com/TheQueerTruth and offer us a small donation. Until next time, peace out.